Edwards, the coffee with the extra flavor lift, brings you Night Editor. Night Editor with Hal Burdick, taking us deep into the Burma jungle in a war story with a different slant titled Point of Honor.
Paddy Gahagan looked around, frantic with fear. There wasn't a weapon of any sort near him, better than a heavy wrench. Behind him, the steel girder of the bridge reached out over 200 feet of nothing. While there in front of him, the muscles of the tiger rippled under the sleek, striped skin as they tightened for the spring that would carry them both into the river, far below.
Well, it's that between editions time of escape from the ringing telephones and clattering typewriters of the newsroom when Hal and Bobby find a few minutes of relaxation before starting the grind of finishing the night's work. At the moment, they're sitting in a corner booth in the little lunchroom down the street from the newspaper office, and Bobby is saying...
I still don't get it, Hal. You buying the coffee with a sandwich thrown in for good measure.
How many times do I have to tell you it's a reward for doing a bang-up job on that story of the hospital ship arriving from the South Pacific?
Yeah, I know, boss, but even
don't
so...
Don't get the idea that it sets any precedent.
I certainly don't expect it to happen every time the local crew comes through with a good yarn. Not from you, boss.
Matter of fact, you fellas missed one of the best feature stories on that ship. I got it myself at dinner tonight from a Colonel Bill Monroe, who's an old friend of mine.
What story was that, Hal?
Well, slide that sugar my way and I'll tell you, Bobby.
There you are. Now.
Yeah, it goes back sometime to the earlier days of the fighting on the Burma front and, well, I'll tell it to you from the beginning. The story of a pair of wild Irishmen and a point of honor.
Point of honor?
Yeah. For the first time in long weeks, Colonel Bill Monroe sat in his steaming headquarters shack deep in the Burma jungle, smiling. From down the narrow gauge track where a river gorge cut a deep slice across the landscape came sounds that were music to his ears. The clatter of steel, the shouts of men at work, the chuffing of hoisting engines and air compressors, the song of riveting hammers. Looking out the mosquito net window, he could see the spidery arch of the bridge beginning to take form. Give him another few weeks, and the trucks carrying vital supplies to the spearheads of the attack up front would be rolling across the span. In the years of his engineering career, this had been Bill Monroe's toughest job. The command higher up had said, "Do it, Colonel," and then handed him a motley crew of natives to carry out the order. Why, beyond a smattering of officers and non-coms from the Army engineers, he hadn't a half dozen men on the job who'd ever seen steel before, much less worked it. As the days crawled by, Bill grew haggard under the strain of trying to accomplish the impossible and prayed for a crew such as he'd worked with in the good old days. And then came the miracle. His prayer was answered. A railroad job in a distant province of India had just been completed. The higher command had employed some experienced men. The steel began to move. And this day, this day, Bill Monroe was smiling as he watched the bridge inching its way across the canyon. Yes, this was bridge building as he loved it. And the fighting men up front, they were going to get those supplies. The door to his office opened, and he looked up to see Captain Joe Yoris, his second in command and active head of construction. He saw, too, that the captain's face was darkened by an angry scowl. What seems to be the matter, Joe? Trouble? Trouble? Oh, there's nothing but trouble. Huh? Well, what is it now? That Paddy Gahagan and Mike Harney. I've just had them in my shanty laying down the law to them, Colonel. I told them if they didn't stop their everlasting fighting and quarreling, I'd throw them both in the river. So, Paddy and Mike are fighting again, huh? Oh, constantly, Colonel. Bill Monroe tapped some tobacco into his pipe, lighted it. Well, I'm not surprised. I expected that when they came to us with that crew they sent us from the railroad job. You see, Joe, I've known that pair for a long time. Had them on construction work in the States. They've been roaming around the world together ever since anybody can remember. Steel jobs everywhere. Always battling with one another and always ready to team up against anyone else who picks on the other fella. He smiled at the young captain through a wreath of smoke, then went on, "But Joe, they're still the best pair we've got on the job. Why, a riveting hammer in Paddy Gahagan's hands is the poetry of motion, no less. As for Harney, he could toss a rivet across two counties and hit a mosquito in the left eye. Sure, sure, I know that, Colonel. But well, just when they get going good, everything stops. While Gahagan topside yells insults at Harney down by the forge. No, we got to put up with them, I suppose, needing good riveters as badly as we do, but just the same, Colonel. While this conversation was going on, two glowering figures were coming to a halt where the steel took off from the sheer wall of the gorge and arched gracefully out into space.
Well, you heard what the captain said, Mike Harney. Meaning what, Paddy Gahagan? That you're to stop your everlasting argufying and attend to your work. And who is it always begins the arguments, Mr. Gahagan? None but your worthless self. But for as little as 2 pins, I'd make you eat that black falsehood. And 'tis sorry I am I've not got the 2 pins with me. And 'tis sorry I am, too. I've no time to waste words with you. What with the work waiting to be done? Just you mind you keep them rivets coming instead of throwing half of them in the river below. Sure, 'tis your eye you've lost, I'm thinking.
My eye, is it? Never a bad toss do I make, Paddy Gahagan.
By God, I don't think you could toss a rivet into the Pacific Ocean if you were standing on the beach.
'Tis but an excuse to cover up your own bad work with the hammer, Gahagan.
And still hurling insults at one another, they parted. Gahagan heading out along the narrow girders toward his perch high over the river, while Harney climbed down to the platform where his native helper stood by the forge. Well, the morning's work progressed a little better after that session of letting off steam, though their awareness of Captain Joe Yoris' watchful eye may have had something to do with it. At noon, the rest of the crew scrambled off the bridge and headed for the mess tent up the track. But Gahagan and Harney stayed on the bridge, having brought lunches with them to save themselves the walk. Above, Gahagan laid a plank across 2 girders where he could ease his back against an upright. And then, between mouthfuls, took up the verbal feud with his companion on the forge platform down below. So busy were they at their exchange of comments on the inaccuracy of rivet tossing and speed with the hammer, neither was aware of something else that was happening, until from the abutment end of the bridge, they heard the crescendo of voices from the rest of the crew returning to work. And over it, Joe Yoris' shrill cry of warning. Gahagan eased himself around on his slender ledge of board. He blinked his eyes against the air of the sun, looked again, and his own cry caught in his throat. Crouching within 15 feet of him was the tawny, striped body of a tiger. Its eyes were green slits. The lips were curled back from the row of gleaming teeth. Apparently, it had come down from the jungle hillside above the bridge while the crew was at lunch. Frightened by the sound of their return, it had run out on the narrow walkway. Now, afraid to go back, its fury was centered on this one human enemy sitting helpless there within a few feet of it. Gahagan looked around him. There wasn't a weapon of any sort near him, better than a heavy wrench. Behind him, the steel reached out over 200 feet of nothing. He heard more shouts. Men were running back up the track to get rifles. The tiger heard the shouting, too, and a low snarl boiled out from between the teeth. The muscles rippled along its body. It tightened for the spring. Then, out of nowhere, something whizzed across the narrow space between the man and the jungle cat. Above the confusion, Gahagan heard a louder shout. Again, that swishing sound. And suddenly he realized. Below him, Mike Harney was working the forge frantically, then stopping to pull a white-hot rivet from the coals. Gahagan's eyes flashed back to the animal. The madness of utter fright was on it now. It was a matter of seconds until that striped body would hurl itself toward him in a blind leap that would send them both spinning down into the chasm. He saw the leg and shoulder muscles ripple under the sleek skin, and Paddy Gahagan closed his eyes, waiting. Then, swish, plunk, a snarl that rose to a scream. Paddy opened his eyes. Harney had thrown, and Harney had thrown true. The white-hot rivet had found its mark. The cat edged away, looking for this new menace. The tongs in Mike Harney's hand swung back, then upward. Swish, plunk. A second chunk of burning metal found its mark. The tiger backed away another step. 1 foot slipped from the narrow walk. It tried to scramble back. The tongs swung again, and Paddy Gahagan felt his body go limp as a third missile thudded against the flat, ugly head, and he saw the jungle killer go tumbling down, rolling over and over until it disappeared in the deep shadows above the river, far below. The workmen crowded around Gahagan. As trembling with relief at his escape, he stepped out on solid ground again. Colonel Bill Monroe was there, and Captain Joe Yoris, and then someone else. The rest of them gave back as Mike Harney pushed his way to Paddy's side. For a moment, they stood there just looking at one another. It was Gahagan who forced the words over the tight knot in his throat. Mike Harney, what can I ever say to thank you?
Whist now, Paddy, 'twas nothing at all.
Their hands met.
I'll never be forgetting this, Mike. But for you, I'd be down there in the river with the tiger. And did you think I'd be standing by to see you harmed, Paddy Gahagan? And you closer to me than a brother through all these years?
Bill Monroe laid an arm around each of their shoulders.
Look, boys, I think the two of you better stay off the steel this afternoon.
Yeah, maybe get out of camp and shake the remembrance of this experience out of your systems, huh? They mumbled their thanks, grinned at one another, linked arms, and pushed their way out of the crowd. Back in his office, Monroe looked at Yoris, grinning.
You know, we should erect a monument to that jungle cat, Joe.
Huh? How so, Chief?
Well, from here on, the work should go forward at double speed. After this, you'll have no more trouble with Gahagan and Harney taking time out to quarrel with one another.
Ah, this, my boy, this should be the beginning of a long and restful peace between them. Yoris started to answer, but his words went unsaid as through the window came,
"And I still say, my Carney, you're losing your eye. Have a care, Paddy Gahagan. Me accuracy with the rivets is a pint of honor with me. Pint of honor or no pint of honor, 3 times you throw at the cat before you hit him, and him as big as the side of a barn crouching there. Can you not get it through your thick skull, Gahagan? I was not trying to hit him with them first 3 throws. They was to drive him back away from you so I might get a fair shot at him. A likely excuse. Would you stand there and argue I couldn't have hit the cat with me first toss if I'd wanted to? With me own 2 eyes, Harney, I saw you miss him. Gahagan, for two pins, I'd cram them words down your blackguard throat. And 'tis sorry I am I've not got the 2 pins with me, Harney. Yes, yes.
As their voices died away, Captain Joe Yoris turned to face Colonel Bill Monroe again. Beginning of a long and restful peace, did you say, Colonel? And it was Yoris' turn to grin that time.
You've noticed, friends, how a good storyteller adds punch to his story by the skillful way he tells it? Well, in a similar way, the Edwards people add something special to Edwards coffee by their skill in blending and roasting. That something special is Edwards' extra flavor lift. Now, this added richness isn't a matter of guesswork. Edwards coffee contains only the choicest Central and South American coffees, blended in small batches, not by weight, but by flavor, under Mr. Dwight Edwards' own personal formula. Every pound is roasted by the modern thermal process. Not too little, not too much, just rich golden brown, with all the natural coffee flavor brought to perfection. And every pound is ground to your order at the store for absolute freshness. Now, if you enjoy rich, delicious, deep-flavored coffee, try Edwards Coffee. Your money refunded if you don't thoroughly enjoy its extra flavor lift. Edwards Coffee is featured at all Safeway stores.
Well, we'll all be hoping to hear from Paddy Gahagan and Mike Harney again sometime, Hal. What's ahead for us next week?
Joe Clark thought it was the luckiest day of his life when he got a job and met Margaret Brandt all on the same afternoon. Then he wondered about his good fortune when he came face to face with Pinky Dolman. Pinky Dolman, the man who once had framed him into a prison term. But their meeting ended in a surprising way. A way that left Joe still calling it his lucky day. And that's the title of the story I'll tell you when we all meet in the newsroom next week. Until then, good night.
Be with us next week at this same time when your night editor, Hal Burdick, brings us another of his thrilling newsroom yarns. This is Bill Baldwin saying goodnight for Edwards Coffee.